J.H. from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
Hey, Darren, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm here again in my room talking to you through the computer, much like I did last week, and the week before that, and the week before that, and the week before that. So, you know,
Okay, you make it sound like you made a wish on a monkey's paw. This isn't a punishment. This is something we choose to do. This is supposed to be fun.
Yeah, no, it is. It is fun. It's a hoot. But yeah, there are times, you know, like everybody else out there who's kind of living the repetitious life that we live in. It does feel like sometimes it does feel like pushing that boulder up a hill and back down and up a hill and back down.
Yeah, but, I get that.
I mean, as far as this goes, I have a great time doing it. So it's like pushing a boulder up a hill and enjoying it and working out your glutes.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. This is fun. This is still generally one of the highlights of my week. It is something I do generally look forward to every week, even though, you know, we might occasionally have some hassles.
We do. Yeah, we've had some hassles. But like, honestly, now that I think about it, you know, maybe I was a little rough with what I said earlier. But yeah, like I do actually enjoy this, you know, talking to you and talking SNL. And it's like, oh, yeah, well, I enjoy hanging out and, you know, busting chops. I think I just enjoy it more when, you know, we're in the same room and like I could see people and whatnot. Like that's, you know, that human touch.
Yeah, we were talking a little before we started recording. And yeah, quarantine, it's getting a little old. And it's also tough just because we're kind of in a holding pattern. Nobody really knows when it's going to end. And it's just, everyone's just like, I don't know. We'll see what happens in November. And, and then we can get our shit together by January or February.
Yeah, like none of our leaders really know what to do or what's going on. And everybody's getting information from different places. You know, people are like saying, you know, wear your mask and stay distant, which you should. And other people are like, this isn't real. It's made by the libtards in a factory in China. And then other people are saying, somebody made a wish on a monkey's paw. And it's no one knows.
That was me like what? 3 minutes ago.
Wait, didn't we talk about monkey's paws in the last episode?
No.
Oh, wait, no.
Yeah. No, that was this episode. I mean,
John, I don't know where I am or what's going on.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. This bodes well for this episode. And this episode, we should say, we once again had like a bit of a change in our planned schedule. We were originally going to do Caddyshack, but we decided against it because we were going to have a guest on for Caddyshack, and our guest couldn't do it. So we decided to put a pin in Caddyshack for now, and we'll get back to it very soon. So we decided to put up a poll on the Twitter page to see what else people might like to hear us talk about.
So we put up 4 movies. It looked like for a minute, Office Space was in the lead. So like,
well, why don't we say what the candidates were?
You know what? Let's do that.
Yeah.
A movie we've talked about, How to Beat the High Cost of Living.
Right.
Nailed it.
Jane Curtin, Susan St. James, and Jessica Lange.
Right. There was Office Space with Jennifer Aniston, Mike Judge movie with Ron Livingston from Swingers.
Yep. And Diedrich Bader.
And Diedrich Bader. Yes, the great Diedrich Bader.
Yep.
Diddy Bays,
as
no one calls him.
No. Well, we're going to get that started.
Yes.
Yeah.
Spies Like Us.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know, Aykroyd and Chase.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie we're going to talk about today, The Other Guys, Wahlberg and Ferrell.
Yeah, the Other Guys, I was a little surprised that The Other Guys ended up winning this. It ended up, we had 17 votes on there. We got 35.3% of the vote for The Other Guys. Office Space came up just behind that with 29.4% of the vote. And How to Beat the High Cost of Living and Spies Like Us both came up with 17.6% of the vote.
And that's what happened. So we were like, all right, let's watch The Other Guys. A movie that came out in 2010, I believe August of 2010. directed by Adam McKay, written by Adam McKay and Chris Henchy, had a budget of 85 to 100 mil, and it grossed 170 mil. So this was a pretty moderate hit, or a pretty good-sized hit.
Yeah, yeah, and it's one of Will Ferrell's collaborations with director Adam McKay. He also did, like, Anchorman, Talladega Nights, Step Brothers, and Anchorman 2, of course. So this was the fourth of their five collaborations.
Right, and I also looked it up, and I saw that the guy, Chris Henchy, who co-wrote the script with Adam McKay, he's also worked with Will Ferrell on a few movies, like The Land of the Lost reboot, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And The Campaign, the movie that Will Ferrell did with Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, and when I was looking up info about this movie, I saw that Adam McKay co-wrote that movie, The Campaign. So, yeah, I feel like this was like kind of an interesting movie in Adam McKay's career, because it's almost the transition between the comedic stuff he did early on with the more political stuff that he's been doing in the last decade or so.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, you definitely see, like, shades of, like, oh, he's taking his career in a bold new direction in this movie. Especially, you know, we'll get to it in the credit scenes. But, like, yeah, there's a lot. Yeah. But we'll get to that later. But, yeah, you definitely see, like, shade, you know, like, the same way, like, when you listen to the Beatles' Revolver, how it's like, you see them kind of change into what, you know, will become Sergeant Pepper, like that phase of their lives.
Uh-huh.
Like this movie is Adam McKay's Revolver, I feel.
Wow. Okay. Now this is kind of interesting, because I saw this movie originally back in the day when it was originally released in 2010. This was your very first time watching this movie. Is that right?
Right. Like I remember the trailers that came out for it, and I don't know, for some reason it didn't really hook me. Like, uh-huh. I really kind of didn't want to see it. It looked kind of hokey. It kind of reminded me of the other movie that Wahlberg and Ferrell were in, with Daddy's Home. And I just thought, like, this looks kind of like, oh, cheesy cop movie. Oh, like, Wahlberg's the angry alpha male cop, and Ferrell's like the goofy, dorky white guy cop. And it's like, all right, I looked at it and I was very dismissive of it. And like, oh, I get it. I know what that's about. But then, like, afterwards, I remember people saying, oh, no, that movie's actually kind of good. It was, like, it was different. It was something to it. Mm-hmm. So, but, like, I still didn't check it out. I was still, like, very kind of maybe, you know, film snob. I was like, it just didn't hook me. So, like,
it's
yeah.
Pop star never stopped popping.
Dude, let's not.
I'm sorry. That was just the first SNL movie that you really liked that came to mind.
Yeah, I will go to bat for that movie. That thing is a fucking work of art.
Hey, I am not bashing it, because I still have not seen that, and we're gonna cover that someday as well. So I look forward to checking that out.
Oh, I diggity damn! Oh, I'll go in that. It'll be a MacGruber long if we ever do that movie.
oh, great, great! I think we're still recording the MacGruber episode.
Yeah, we're taking naps in between recording the MacGruber episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like I still never saw the other guys until this morning when we were recording it for this episode. So yeah, you're gonna have some fresh hot takes from me on this episode.
All right, this is gonna be fun. I'm looking forward to this. This is cool. I mean, do you want to give overall first impressions, or should we just discover those naturally as they arise?
Let's discover it naturally. Let's go step by step through this thing.
Okay. Wow. You're playing your cards very close to the vest, and I'm not sure if you enjoyed this movie or not. I'm a little nervous now.
Well, carefully.
Okay. Well, you know, the movie starts out. We got some narration from a great TV cop, Ice-T.
Yes, Ice-T narrates this movie.
Yeah.
So he talks, so Ice-T, you know, brings us into it. He's basically, it takes place in New York City. Mm-hmm. Talk about, you know, the cops and the crime in the city. And then we cut to these two cops chasing down some Jamaicans and having a shootout. Like, it's a very, like, big budget movie, Michael Bay type of, you know, bad boys action.
Big, big climactic car chase that you've seen in a million and one movies. And there are these two super cops that are played by The Rock and Samuel L. Jackson. And they're running around, they're doing stunts, they're quipping, they're playing Danson and Highsmith. There are these two super cops.
Yeah, and the opening is really like something out of a Michael Bay film. Like Samuel Jackson's driving this, you know, fancy souped-up hot rod. They're driving down, I guess, what looks like, you know, Park Avenue or something like that. The big shootout. These two Jamaicans are shooting back at them. They crash their car into like a double-decker tour bus at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they
hijack the tour bus and they continue the chase on the double-decker tour bus with the car still embedded in the middle of it.
Yeah, it is just over the top, and it's like over the top, and then it's over the top.
And this is over the top. I mean, and you know, they're quipping the whole way, and you know, the Rocky's like on top of a car at the beginning, and he's like, "Why did I jump out and jump onto this car again?" And when they crash into the bus, Samuel L. Jackson's like, you know, "Did anyone get that? What did he say?" He was like, you know, "Did anybody call 911 or something like that?"
Something like that.
Or 9-1, yeah. What the fuck?
Oh, yeah, 9-1, what the fuck, yeah.
Yeah. And then there was something that surprised me, because I haven't seen this movie probably in about 10 years since it first came out. They crashed the car into Trump Tower.
Yeah. I was like, oh, that's funny.
That really surprised me. I had not remembered that because, you know, back in 2010, you know, he was just an asshole businessman who had a reality show that I could easily ignore. And those were the days.
Right. Back when we could meet each other in public or in the outdoors without masks.
Yeah, yeah. Back when we had some competent leadership.
Remember those days? That was nice.
Yeah, barely. but they crash a car into Trump Tower and you see it go up in flames, which is, that was very fun. That was kind of cathartic for me.
That did warm my heart. I will give it that.
And I don't know if that was actually shot at Trump Tower, if they just mocked it up somehow. You would think they would need some sort of permission to feature it, but I don't know.
I'm going to tell myself it was Trump Tower just so, like, you know, my spirits will stay lifted.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Okay.
So then, you know, after this huge car chase, we cut to them giving a press conference, and we find out that they had this whole elaborate chase because they were chasing down the two Jamaicans with a quarter pound of marijuana.
Yeah, they did have like a cool joke in there that I dug. That like, you know, they were giving the press conference, you know, on the steps of City Hall. The reporters are around them, and one reporter said he was from the New York Observer Online.
Right, right.
And then there was another reporter that asked a question, and she was from TMZ Print Edition.
yeah.
Like, oh, that's a clever little thing they did. It's like, I see what you did there.
Yeah, yeah. And I liked how the guy, you know, before he said online, there was just this pause and he just like had this shame filled pause. He was like, online, because it wasn't as prestigious.
Right.
But as they were chasing down these fellows with the quarter pound of marijuana, they caused $12 million in damages. So.
Yeah. But you know, still the city loves these two guys, Danson and Highsmith. Like, one hot dog vendor is like, "You guys get free hot dogs for life."
Yeah.
No drinks though. No drinks. I can't swing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't afford it. Yeah. But they're, and we see them, they go back to their precinct, they've got medals on and everyone's applauding them. And we see some of the other cops, in the precinct. We've got Will Ferrell as a detective, Alan Gamble, who willingly does their paperwork. And Terry Hoyts, who's played by Mark Wahlberg, who's very frustrated that there are these other two alpha males in the precinct, you know, because he wants a chance to, you know, be a super cop himself. You know, he keeps saying like, "I'm a peacock, Captain. You got to let me fly."
Oh, that's a good Mark Wahlberg.
I can really only do like one Mark Wahlberg line well, and it's Mark Wahlberg from Planet of the Apes. It's how'd these monkeys get like this? That's the limit of my Mark Wahlberg. But I will say it is very funny to have the guy with the pronounced Boston accent be the New York cop in the whole movie, and it's never commented on.
Yeah, they just don't like, oh, I guess he's from Boston, and he's here now. All right, whatever.
Yeah. You know, everyone's like, I can't believe how from New York this guy is.
Hey, how's it going? I'm Mark Wahlberg. Hey.
Say hi to your mother for me.
Hey, guys, I think it's the trees. The trees are doing it. Yeah, the plants.
Yeah. Like that's from, like this.
Yeah. I mean, that's from I never saw The Happening, but like I've heard enough stories about it to know that yeah. That goofy line was like.
Yeah, I'd kind of given up on him like Shyamalan by that point.
But yeah.
Happening rolled around. I think the last movie his I saw in the theaters was the Signs. The Bill Gibson Alien Invasion one.
I stuck with it. I think the last one was maybe Lady in the Water, and after that, I was like, I'll see myself out.
Yeah, I think I'm done. I think yeah. I'm done.
But like a friend of mine saw The Happening in the theaters, and like that's when he was like, I think he like walked out halfway through. It's like, oof.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, that's an interesting point, actually. I mean, at this point in Mark Wahlberg's career, it was kind of unusual to see him doing an out-and-out comedy. I mean, he'd had, like, comedic things in, like, Boogie Nights, but I don't think he really done, like, an out-and-out comedy before this?
I don't think so. I think, like, he was mostly, like, I mean, he started doing the dramas, and then he was, like, action guy. I mean, I think before this, it was... It was that film, Daddy's Home, right? And then, like, I think
this was the first one they did. I think they did this before Daddy's Home.
Oh, is it? Well, yeah. Hold on. I'm looking up his.
Yeah, Daddy's Home was 2015, and Daddy's Home 2 is 2017. So this would be. Let me do the math on that. 5 years before, yes.
Sounds good. All right. So I'm looking up his stuff. Yeah, it's mostly. Action movies and dramas. Then he had that small part in Date Night with Tina Fey and Steve Carell. That was a comedy. Okay.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I caught a little of that on TV, and I did see him on that. Yeah.
Okay. And you're right. Yeah, the other guys came out before that. And then of course Ted was the big one.
Oh yeah. Oh, how am I forgetting Ted? Ted's I think is still like the highest grossing comedy.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ted was all right. Oh, Daddy's Home was 2015. Boy, I don't know why I thought that was before, but yeah. So basically, the other guys was like one of his early forays into comedy.
Yeah, yeah, and it kind of arose in an interesting way because the Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg did a bit together at the Academy Awards when they were presenting an award together, and they kind of had chemistry, and so they started developing this movie after that. So that I think is an interesting way that it came about.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that works. It works.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, they do have an odd chemistry that really does kind of work.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't think it would, but it kind of does.
Yeah. But Alan Gamble and Terry Hoyt, they're a mismatched pair as partners.
Right. Like Hoyt is like the angry hothead who he was out on the beat, but he got bussed down to doing desk work. You know, for something, and we'll talk about it later. But Alan Gamble is like the guy who actually enjoys doing, you know, paperwork and being behind a desk. And, you know, Toyt is constantly, you know, berating him, saying he's not a real cop and kind of calling his manhood into question at every turn.
Yeah, yeah. They do not get along well. And we've got some other cops. In the precinct, we've got Marlon Wayans Jr. and Rob Riggle as a couple of other cops in the precinct.
I think it's Damon Wayans Jr.
Damon, I'm sorry. Why did I say Marlon? Okay.
That's another way. There's so many Wayans.
Yeah, there are. Okay. So thank you for forgiving me and not immediately assuming I was racist. But Damon Wayans.
I was like, you know what? I'll let this slide.
No, as he puts a little notch on the John racist tab.
Oh, can you see what I'm doing? Something that can take a computer?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
But they were. What were their names? There was like it was Martin and Fosse or something in Fosse.
Yeah, Martin and Fosse. That's it. And they're Martin like and the.
Fosse. It sound like they should be writing a musical, but
yes. fierce.
Yes.
Yeah,
and I've been a musical written by Damon Wayans Jr. and Rob Riggle, I think.
Damn straight. You have my money.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
And we also have as their captain, the great Michael Keaton.
Yes. Michael Keaton up in his piece.
Yeah. And it was really fun to see Michael Keaton in a comedy again, because like, again, at the time this movie came out, he hadn't been doing a whole lot of that lately. So it was fun to see him kind of return to his comedic roots.
Yeah, I think people kind of forget that, like, no, he's actually, like, really funny. Like, he's one of those guys, like Tom Hanks, that can effectively be very dramatic and be really genuinely funny. I just hope he does more comedies down the road.
Yeah, I mean, he's great. I mean, I'll see Michael Keaton in most anything. I can't remember a film that I've seen Michael Keaton in where I thought like, oh well, he did a bad job in that, you know?
Yeah,
no, it didn't happen.
He always constantly bringing the heat.
He is Michael Keaton. He is just an assassin, man. He will just come in and just nail that fucking moment.
Oh my God, man, the dynamo.
And let's see, we also meet our villain of the film, Steve Coogan, who's playing like this financial guy by the name of David Urshan. And he's at a company called Lendl Global, right? This movie gets very complex with the financial stuff, you know?
Yeah, this is one of my, I guess, beefs with the movie. It was really complicated, like the whole plot. But well, I mean, we'll talk about it later. But like, I took down a ton of notes just because I was trying to figure out, all right, who is this again? What's happening? It was a very kind of involved plot. Steve Coogan plays David Urshan, who's an investment banker for, I think, Urshan. I forget the name of the company.
Right.
But he's also working with this woman, Boardman, played by Anne Heche in an uncredited role.
Yeah, I totally forgotten that she was in this movie.
Yeah, like I was looking through the listings and like I didn't see her name, and then she just popped up on the screen. I was like, "Whoa, hey!"
Yeah, I wonder why she was uncredited.
Right, but she is the she's Pamela Boardman, who is the CEO of Lendl Global.
Okay, yeah, and basically, like we find out that Steve Coogan's character He's borrowed a lot of money and lost a ton of money, like billions of dollars. And he has to get that back so that Lendl Global doesn't show a loss. Right?
Right, exactly.
I'm explaining that correctly. I mean, so it's actually not that far from like what happened in, say, Casino Royale. Like Le Chiffre, he borrowed a bunch of money and lost it. And so he had to get it back or mean people were going to try to kill him.
Oh wow! I did not expect you to bring in James Bond into this episode, but all right.
Well, I mean, it just struck me during this rewatch. I was like, you know, the motivation. It's not entirely unlike the Casino Royale.
Okay, yeah. All right. I did. Wow. You never cease to amaze me, good sir.
I'm full of surprises, Darren Patterson.
Wow.
Full of surprises. And then we follow Mark Wahlberg's character, Terry, to a counseling session for police officers who fired their weapons in the line of duty. And we find out a little of Mark Wahlberg's character's backstory, Terry's backstory. We find out that he actually shot Derek Jeter.
You're right. Accidentally, just because, like, basically the story is he was he was working, I guess, the World Series up in the Bronx at the Yankee Stadium, and he was like supposed to be guarding like a restricted area. He saw somebody coming towards him. He's saying, hey, there's a restricted area. He pulled his gun, shot him. It turned out to be Derek Jeter. And so now he got bussed down, and apparently all of New York hates him. Because when you know, Derek Jeter is a beloved biracial angel in New York City.
As they actually refer to him in this movie, a biracial angel.
Right. So,
yeah, I thought that was a neat bit of backstory of why he's persona non grata and basically confined to a desk throughout the movie. I'd kind of misremembered that this was a revelation that came much later in the movie, like halfway through. So I was very surprised when it was revealed this early on.
No, they told us to you right up top.
Yeah, excuse me.
That's okay. And also in this scene, we get a little Bobby Cannavale and Zoe Lister-Jones acting in as part of the group too.
Yeah. I'd forgotten that Bobby Cannavale was in this movie. Always fun to see him. I like seeing him pop up wherever. I think most recently I enjoyed him on Aziz Ansari's show on Netflix. What was that called?
Oh, Master of None?
Master of None. Yeah, he was really good on that.
Yeah, no, that was... He's good stuff. He's a solid actor.
Good stuff. Nice seeing him.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, so we got Alan and Terry. They're clashing. They got different ways to go about things. Alan, he gravitates towards the paperwork, and he likes investigating these, you know, very unsexy crimes. Like, he's investigating this one thing of, like, scaffolding regulation violation, you know, like something with the paperwork. So, you know, not the sort of thing they make movies about, basically.
Right. And I think at one point, Fosse and Martin, you know, Riggle and Waynes Jr., they kind of tease him and they say, hey, Gamble, because he's Alan Gamble. It's like, hey, Gamble, you know, you got to do like a desk pop. You never fired your gun in the office. Like, everybody's done it. So you got it's called a desk pop. So you got to shoot. They basically convince him to shoot his gun off in the office to be like part of the crew, and he does it, and he's like, oh my god, I can't believe you did that. Apparently there's no such thing as a desk pop.
No, but he's like, but they were so convincing. it eventually gets to the point where they take his gun away and they give him a wooden gun to carry around.
Yeah. So the next thing that happens is we see this robbery happening mm-hmm. where somebody takes like a wrecking ball and smashes through a jewelry store, and there's a big jewelry heist. So they put out the APB saying the cops to, you know, come stop these guys. And of course, we have our big heroes, Danson and Highsmith,
super cops.
Yes, super cops. So they're in pursuit. They're chasing the criminals through the building. The criminals run up the stairs, then the super cops run after them. So the cops are on the roof, but somehow the criminals got away, and they see them escaping as they drive off. And then I think Danson looks at Highsmith like, "What are you thinking?" And they say, "Well, maybe we should. I think we should jump off this building, aim for the bushes,
and
get them down."
And they get a running start, and they jump off the building, and there's this amazing shot of you see them, and they're like just, you know, running like in midair, just kind of kicking their legs, and it follows them all the way to the ground, and they hit the ground and just die instantly.
All while My Hero by Foo Fighters plays in the background.
Yes. I think that is absolutely one of the funniest moments in the movie, because you are not expecting them to just abruptly kill off The Rock and Samuel L. Jackson.
And they do that. That scene was pretty hilarious because it's literally just them like in slow motion falling to their death while Foo Fighters plays,
right,
and like just splat. Like they're not. There's no awning anywhere. There's nowhere for them to safely land, to the point where like, why did they do this? This makes no sense.
Yeah, but it's the type of thing you see in action movies all the time. You see people like jumping off buildings and making these incredible stunts, and then you just see them hit the pavement, and then they immediately smash cut to their funerals, and everyone's like, yeah, why did they do that? They jumped 20 stories. There wasn't even an awning. There was nothing for them to land on but pavement. And there's also a cute bit because, like, Gamble and Hoyts, Hoyts is like, hey, with these two gone, there's an opening for, you know, some big super cops, and we can be those guys. He wants to fill the slot that's left by them. And they start kind of arguing at the funeral, but because they're at a funeral, everyone's whispering.
Right.
And it gets more and more heated, but everyone's still whispering. And it gets to the point where it gets physical between Gamble and Martin, was it?
Yeah, Rob Riggle's character. Like, right. I think it was like Rob Riggle's character and and Wahlberg's character. Oh, they were like, yeah, they're getting into like a quiet fist fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the captain comes over and scolds him, and he's like, "What are you guys doing? Stop this!" And yeah. It's just very funny because it's all whispering. That was a neat twist that they put on the scene.
Yeah, yeah, no, I dug that. That was a little funny thing they did.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So after that happens, they go back to the office. There's another call out on like a crime scene. Somebody got shot downtown. It seems like Fosse and Martin are poised to be the next hot shop super cops.
Yep.
So they go to the scene of the crime, but Hoyt really wants this. So he like forces Gamble at gunpoint to go to the scene of the crime.
Yeah, he smuggles him out of he like does that thing where like, you know, he pulls the gun on him and he has holding it at his side, but the gun's kind of hidden. So you don't realize that the person's being kidnapped. And then Will Ferrell, he leads him out of the station. Will Ferrell's like, "Really? Nobody's going to stop this? This is a police station. Somebody should care about this."
So then they get into Gamble's car, which is a Prius, which is mm-hmm. something they kind of joke about throughout the movie.
They do a number on the Prius.
Yeah, the Prius gets it gets beat up a little bit.
Yeah, but I think this had to be like some product placement because the vehicle does also take a beating and comes through it with flying colors. So I don't know. Because I don't think you could use the actual brand name without permission from the company, right?
I'm pretty sure there was like some, you know, the Prius people were like, you know, slid them some dough to mention their, you know, product placement and whatnot.
Yeah, I feel like some of this movie's budget came from the Prius company.
Yeah, it's like that movie The Italian Job with Wahlberg where they had all the Mini Coopers.
Same. Yeah, yeah, Mini Coopers like took a jump in popularity after that. So
I'm just saying, this is all big Prius. Their way of, you know, getting the word out about their car.
Yeah, but Hoyt doesn't like it. Hoyt doesn't like it. He was like, you know, this is literally like riding on the inside of a vagina.
Yeah, there's a lot of like masculinity jokes at Gamble's expenses and whatnot throughout the movie.
Yeah, yeah, you know, like Terry's got a lot of macho hang-ups, so. Yeah, a lot of that.
Yeah, I think at one point, Alan plays like Reminiscing by the Little River Band, which is a delightful mm-hmm. song. And then I think Terry's like, "What are you playing? I feel like I'm trying on a bra for the first time."
Yeah, and he's pressuring Alan to go faster, to accelerate to the crime scene. And finally, like, Alan floors it, and they end up ramming through the police tape at the crime scene, running over the corpse, and into like bags of cocaine. So cocaine goes flying everywhere, and his Prius is covered with cocaine.
Yeah, apparently that's a bad look.
I mean, it doesn't quite fit in with the suburban brand that Prius has, you know?
A dead body under your car and cocaine on your hood?
Yeah, but hey, that is just the beginning of the grief that this Prius will undergo over the course of this movie.
Oh, please. I agree.
But so after this, they investigate Alan's scaffolding case, so the scaffolding violations, and they end up arresting David Urshan, Steve Coogan's character.
Right. Because Urshan, he's on the phone with some investors. He's on the phone with mm-hmm. Anne H.'s character. You know, she wants her money. The company wants her money. And he's like, "Oh, no, you'll get your money. Meanwhile, he's like, he's making a break for it, like trying to escape the country.
Right, and she's put some guys after him who are supposed to watch him and make sure that he doesn't try to get away somewhere.
Yes, hired goons.
Hired goons. One of the big Australian goon.
Yes, Roger Wesley. I forget who plays the dude, but yeah, like so basically.
I got the cast list up. Let me look it up.
Oh.
Roger Wesley, you said?
Yes.
I got it. Yeah, Ray Stevenson, who also played the Punisher.
Oh shit, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh right. Oh, and he was in Thor. How about that?
Oh yeah, that's right. He was Volstagg, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So he's doing a bunch of stuff.
He's done stuff.
Look at him doing stuff.
Look at him with his things.
Yeah, I didn't recognize Ray Stevenson in this. I guess he's usually made up as something when I see him. So,
He always has like fake mustaches and like covered in, you know, fancy leathers and furs.
Yeah, yeah, something yeah. like that.
Yeah. So Steve Coogan's character, he's like kind of wants. He's trying to make a break for it. Mm-hmm. But our guys, Gamble and Hoyt, they arrest him on the scaffolding charges that Gamble's been investigating. So right. They put him in the back of the Prius, which is, they get cut off by and Hayes's goons, Ray Stevenson, and they take Gamble's car with Steve Coogan in it.
Right, they kidnap their perp and they take their guns and their shoes. So I guess so they can't give chase or something.
Right, they take their phones, their guns, and their shoes.
Yeah,
they just skate off.
Mm-hmm. And so Gamble and Hoyt's they have to walk like 30 blocks back to the station house, and. It doesn't go over well. Yeah, they don't want to call in to have somebody pick them up because they don't want a word to get out about this happening. But word gets out anyway.
As it does, you know, telephone.
As it does. Not a good day for them.
Not a good day. But then they show up to the precinct, and who is there but Ray Stevenson? Mm-hmm. And then they're like, hey, that's the guy that stole our car, Captain. And, I think the captain says, well, did you identify yourselves as cops?
Yeah.
And they were like, no, we did not do that.
Yeah, we were wearing our badges. They had the little badges in the lanyard, but no, they did not say, hey, we're cops. And yeah, and so Steve Coogan is like released to their custody.
I think Steve Coogan, he's not there. I think it's just Ray Stevenson.
Yeah, yeah.
But he gives them back their shoes and their their phone, but didn't give them back their car. Like the car is still like gone.
Yeah, it's still gone.
But it shows up later.
Yes, it shows up later. But yeah, this is the first indication that, you know, this case is bigger than it appears. There's something more going on.
Right.
So Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg, they decide to get together over dinner and, talk about the case. So Will Ferrell invites Mark Wahlberg over to dinner, and that's where we meet Alan's wife, played by Eva Mendes, who's Dr. Sheila Gamble.
Right, and at this point, I mean, they have like the little funny thing here where, like, Terry is like, "Oh no, who is that?" And like Alan's like, "No, that's my wife," and he's like, "Oh no, really? No, seriously, who is that?"
yeah, because I mean, the joke is, I mean, Eva Mendes is, of course, staggeringly beautiful woman. She's just always like the most gorgeous person in anything she's in.
It's distracting at some point.
Yeah. I mean, she is just like stupefyingly beautiful. And throughout the movie, Will Ferrell is just acting like, yeah, I know she's kind of homely, but you know, hey. He says, like, look, they're not all first round draft picks, all right?
Yeah. I'm like, Jesus, Will Ferrell.
Terry, meanwhile, is just so disbelieving. He's like, no, seriously, who is this person?
Yeah.
It just does not compute that she would be with Will Ferrell.
Yeah. I think at one point when they're having dinner, like, Terry literally can't stop staring at her. He's just like, he is fixated.
Well, I mean, she comes in, she's, you know, Eva Mendes, she's very striking. She's in kind of like a low cut top, and she kind of jiggles on into the room, I should say.
Hey now.
Things are bouncing around. Let me just say that.
Bouncing around.
Mm-hmm.
I think at one point Terry even says, why are you with Alan? She says to Sheila, why are you with Alan?
Yeah. Yeah, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I mean, how did you meet? And she tells a story about how, he came into her hospital when she was working in the ER, and he had like poison ivy on all over his rectum. And he's like, you know, it was just like in that Meg Ryan movie. What was it? Oh, you've got mail. And and Terry's like, that never happens in You've Got Mail. Tom Hanks never had poison ivy on his rectum. And they're like, oh, yeah, no, sure he did. He totally did.
It's in the bonus scenes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then they say goodbye. Terry leaves for the night. You know, I think he goes in to hug Sheila, and then he kind of like tries to, you know, neck with her at one point. And so then Terry leaves, but then we see there's like a somebody in an SUV that's been following them. So very ominous.
Yeah.
So then the next scene, we find out that Alan's car has been found under some.
It's been found, yes. But it's not in good shape. It's pretty torn up. And they say, oh, yeah, we discovered some homeless dudes had an orgy in the car.
Yeah, it's called a soup kitchen.
It's called a soup kitchen. Yeah, there's a term for it. And then, you know, a raccoon mother gave birth on the floor.
Yeah, and it's and she said there was like a baby mouse inside of a used condom in the back seat or something.
Yeah. Stuff's been going on in it.
It got gross.
It got gross. You know, some things went down, you guys.
Yeah. There was one point where, after the homeless orgy that they had in there, like the people left a note saying, hey, thanks for, you know, thanks for letting us F in your wagon, signed signed Dirty Mike and the Boys.
Yeah, I think it's literally like thanks for the fuck wagon or something like that.
Which is nice.
But they also discover a piece of evidence. They discover that on the cell phone, like the on Alan's cell phone, which was in the car, apparently they butt dialed a number and they think the call might have recorded some incriminating evidence. So they go to the number that was dialed, and it's one of Alan's ex-girlfriends, Christina. And they go to her house to try and get whatever possible evidence that she might have.
Right, and they also found some lottery tickets in the backseat too, which plays.
Oh yes, yes, thank you. That is another important plot point. And yeah, and they go to Christina, and she's played by Natalie. Is it Z or Zay? I don't know.
Zay.
She's on the Detour. That's probably what she's best known for these days.
Yeah, and she was also on Justified.
Okay, yeah, and another strikingly beautiful woman, and she's and it quickly becomes apparent that she's never gotten over Alan. We meet her husband, Hal, who's played by Brett Gelman, and she is like outright saying, "Oh, look, you know, I let Alan do things to me in bed that I've never let anyone else," pointing at Hal, "do to me."
Yeah, it's an ongoing theme that. Like Alan has like some way with the women that like it's that Terry does not understand. Like for some reason, like gorgeous, like model-esque women just really want that gamble peen.
Yeah, they are falling all over him. Yeah, he's got the Kavorka like Kramer on Seinfeld. You know.
Ooh, I was gonna say he's got the moves like Jagger, but I like Kavorka better.
Well, that's a more current reference. Yes, yes. And Maroon 5 is actually briefly mentioned in the movie as well.
They are. Oh, we'll get to that.
You will get to that. We'll get to that. It becomes you know very apparent that Christina, and that is her name, Christina. It ends with an ith, and Hal want Alan to have sex with her.
Yeah, it gets weird.
It gets weird. They get out of there with the bit of evidence and hear a bit of the conversation that convinces them they're on the right track.
Right. Yes. Because they're able to get the phone and listen to the message that was left on Christina's phone. And so some of the stuff that the villains were talking about was recorded. And then they listen to the message and they basically find out that Urshan needs to find somebody to invest money in him so he can get the money back that he lost for Boardman.
Yeah.
And there's also the address. He says, meet me at such and such address. And the address is for the lottery offices, which is like, oh, what? They think, oh, how is the lottery involved in this? Like, it seems like, and then Gamble and Hoyt realize that Urshan is using the lottery to cover his losses with state's money through the lottery.
Yes, yes.
I wrote that a lot of notes because like,
you did. You followed this more closely than I did. And we also find out a little bit of Alan's backstory because Terry, he's just stupefied that all these gorgeous women are falling all over him. There was even like one of the evil hench women or henchman, hench person. I don't know what the correct term is. An evil bad guy who is female type.
Hench people, John.
Hench people.
But there's
a strikingly beautiful woman there, and she even seems to have a thing for Alan. And so Terry is like, Alan, what is this? What is this thing you have going on with women? And Alan tells the story of how back when he was like a sophomore in college, one of his female friends was dating a lot, and she finally decided to start charging money for dates. And she asked him to be like her protection and to like help collect the money and make sure that she was safe. And this business became quite successful, and eventually some more of her female friends decided to join. And he's running this whole college dating service, but he was not a pimp.
but he went by a nickname. He went by Gator.
He went by Gator, yes. And he's like wearing gold chains, and we see him, and he's got like a metal grill at one point. He's got this whole backstory. And he was Gator when he met Sheila, because he got the poison ivy in the rectum.
Right. I don't think they said how that happened. He just happened to have it.
I can't remember exactly. I don't know.
But yeah, so it seems the movie is slowly telling us that even though Alan seems like a very straight-laced, nerdy dude, he does have like a dark past and a bit of a bad boy streak in him.
He's got his demons.
A little bit of Frank the Tank in there.
Yeah, yeah. We should also mention that we had Terry. He's trying to connect with his ex-fiance Francine, played by Lindsay Sloan, who I've always liked. I always like when I see her pop up and stuff. She's done a million and one things. She was in Sabrina the Teenage Witch back in the day. I know she's had guest spots on a ton of shows. She was in that movie. She's Out of My League.
She's done stuff. So Hoyt shows up to his ex's ballet class because she's a ballerina. She's taking, she's like, what's it called?
Rehearsing.
Rehearsing. That's the word.
Yeah.
And he causes a bit of a scene.
Yeah. And he's like, and he's treating it like she's a stripper. He's like, you know, why are you here shaking it for all these guys? And she's like, I'm a ballerina. These poles are horizontal, not vertical. This is my ballet partner. And
what are you doing? Shaking off all these guys.
It's very funny because Mark Wahlberg just plays it like totally straight. You know, like in his mind, it's like she's actually stripping. But
right. It's a bit classier than that.
Yeah. Yes. Being a ballerina, a bit classier than being a stripper.
A little bit.
Yes.
So back to the case. So as we're talking about the case, Gamble, he looked more and more into Urshan's accounting firm. And then he found out that Urshan's accounting firm actually operates through Greshel and Dawson's accounting firm in Fairlawn, New Jersey. They have one client, which is Urshan.
So they drive out to New Jersey. Woo, New Jersey.
New Jersey.
And they go to like the strip mall where this is. And as soon as they're about to go into the accounting firm, it blows up.
Right. And then we see that it's actually the mercenary folks that followed them to Jersey to like kind of put a scare into them. So that because they get too close, man.
But it's fun because like we've seen a million and one cop movies where you know, they're walking towards a place and it like blows up just feet in front of them. And usually it's just like, oh, they've got a few cuts and scrapes, you know, from when they fell on the pavement. But as soon as they fall on the ground, Will Ferrell's like, I can't hear. My eardrums are blown out. Oh my God. I have soft tissue damage. Oh no. When this happens in movies, that's bullshit. That is bullshit.
Yeah. He's they're definitely hurt. They were hurting.
You know, it's very cute. I really like this movie when it's poking at the cop movie cliches and the sort of things that they've been doing for so long that you don't even question them anymore.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So at this point, the guys realize that they're close to something and they're, you know, people trying to scare them. Hoyt wants to go straight at Urshan and just like confront them about what the hell's going on. So they just barge right into Urshan's office. Urshan and says, you know, I want to thank you for everything you're doing. I'm willing to comply with the cost in any way I can. And as a gesture of good faith and gratitude, let me give you some courtside tickets to the Knicks game.
Yes. Yeah. And then it immediately cuts to them at the Knicks game, sitting courtside next to like Brooke Shields and Tracy Morgan. And there was somebody famous on the other side, too. I forget who.
Rosie Perez.
Rosie Perez, that's right. And then they're like, hey, wait a minute, that was a bribe.
Yeah. And and then they get up to leave, and of course, mm-hmm. Brooke Shields tells Alan, hey, call me.
Yeah. And Brooke Shields, by the way, married to the co-screenwriter of this movie. So that is how they got Brooke Shields in this movie.
Oh, shit, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, I read that on the IMDb.
Oh, wow. But I just thought it was funny, we had like Tracy Morgan. He has no lines in this film. He's just there.
He's just there.
Yeah, and the same thing with Rosie Perez. She's there, but no lines. She's just like, they're just talking to other people.
Yep. They're just hanging out, you know, sitting courtside like, you know, the famous people do. So in the middle of the game, they're like, hey, that was a bribe. And then they go back to Urshan's office and they're like, hey, don't try to bribe us like that again. And he's like, you're right. I won't. But I'll give you guys a choice. Do you want to see Mamma Mia or do you want to see Jersey Boys? And then it immediately cuts to them at an actual performance of Jersey Boys on Broadway.
Yeah. And then the guy's like, damn it, he did it again.
And then they go back to Urshan's office. This, again, was one of my favorite sequences in the movie. I thought this was really funny.
Yeah, no, it's really fun. It kind of reminds me of a gag I would have seen in, like, Family Guy or The Simpsons. Uh-huh. But I really got a kick out of that scene.
Yeah, it was almost like cartoon logic in there. And like at one point, like later on in the movie, they're hauling Urshan away, and he's saying like, well, hey, I could offer you some tickets for Rock of Ages, because he's like down at the bottom of his bronze lips.
I can afford Rock of Ages.
Yeah. So I thought that was really cute.
Oh, poor Rock of Ages.
But the investigation doesn't go well, and they're ordered to turn over all the evidence they've gathered over to like the attorneys, like the district attorneys.
Right, but actually, I think before that, though, because when they go back to Urshan's office, mm-hmm. to, like, shake him down, and I think Hoyt said, oh, you know, they want to do like a good cop, bad cop, but I think Alan gets his wires crossed and Holt comes in as the bad cop and Gamble comes in as the batter cop. And he's just like, he's literally like throwing stuff around and slamming Urshan against the desk. It's like, I will make you eat a pile of shit, human shit. And, so then they get kicked out of the office. Then they get attacked in the parking lot on their way out by the same mercenaries that, you know, have been trying to get at Urshan. They get tased, they get put back into their Prius, and before they know it, they're on a freight train headed to Las Vegas.
Yes. And we see Alan sheepishly calling his captain to say, like, hey, we got smuggled over to Las Vegas. And he's wearing, like, a Vegas Baby t-shirt. So, like, you know, while they're in Vegas, they did some touristy stuff.
When in Rome, John. When in Rome.
I don't know what that means.
oh, dear.
So when they get back to the city, that's when they're ordered to turn in all their evidence to the district attorney. And when they get there to turn in the evidence, they discover that the guy they're turning it into is Urshan's personal attorney.
Yes. And we also see like a little bit of Ben Schwartz. He's like at the guy desk. I think it was like the district attorney or the FBI office. Yeah. But then we see that they're supposed to hand over all their info to, like you said, Urshan's lawyer. And he's like, what the hell is this about? This ain't right.
Yeah, and he's like, hey, I promise you there's no conflict of interest here. I'm just going to look all this over. Then I'll compare it with Urshan's personal records. And, you know, I'll make sure there aren't any discrepancies. So, you know, right. It's all on the up and up. It's all good.
Right. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. And then also a few other things happen where, because after, you know, after they've proven that they can't handle the case, Will Ferrell's character Gamble has to give him back. He has to give the captain the wooden gun back, and he's not able to keep it. And the captain gives him instead a rape whistle.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a bit of a downgrade.
So the guys are down in the dumps. We see that we see a Gamble and his wife are talking, and then he's talking about how he's bummed out. I think at one point Alan at this point he kind of realizes he has like a darkness in him that he needs to like reconcile with.
Mm-hmm.
Sheila tries to comfort him, but he kind of keeps her at bay. Sheila reveals that she's pregnant with her kid. And he gets angry, and then they have a big fight, and then he leaves.
Yeah, he goes into Gator. He's like, you know, my bitch has better been, you know, wearing jimmies. Which, you know, it's just funny to hear Will Ferrell talking like a threatening pimp.
I haven't heard the term jimmies in quite some time.
Yes. That's not what the kids are saying anymore, I don't think.
No, I think they just say condoms.
Candoms? Did they say it like that?
That's what the Boston kids say.
Candoms.
Wait, give me a pack of condoms in.
I got some wicked condoms here.
Hey guys, I got some condoms. Some condoms. So at this point they're at the low point. I think at this point Alan is like by the water. You know, it's kind of contemplating. Hoyt joins him because. I guess Hoyt's like, oh, this is where I come when I'm having women problems. And then we see like a nice little cameo from Dirty Mike and the Boys, the same homeless people that were, you know, having the orgy in the Prius. And it turned out Dirty Mike, played by Adam McKay.
Yeah, director Adam McKay as Dirty Mike, you know, who he wants to use the fuck wagon.
Yeah, and the boys next to him, it's the producer, DP and prop master of the movie.
Oh, that's nice. I didn't realize that. That's awesome.
That one I did a little digging for and I found out. Yeah, they're all people that worked on this movie.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. So, yeah. So, during the downtime for the movie, they have homeless orgies together. That's nice.
It's together time.
they bond outside of work. I like that.
That's right. Teamwork makes the dream work.
I don't know
if you ever heard that.
Yeah, no, I have heard that. By this point, let's see. Urshan's attorney, not long after they give him all the paperwork, they actually get a call for a possible suicide, and they go over to the building, and Urshan's attorney is there standing outside the window, and he's ready to jump.
Yeah. Apparently, they beat Fosse and Martin again to the scene. They try to talk him down, but you know they don't have a megaphone, so he uses a megaphone from like the PA system from an ice cream truck nearby.
Yeah.
Of course, they try to talk him down, and of course, they're unsuccessful. And Urshan's lawyer plunges to his death and lands on a hot dog cart.
Right. Right. I don't know if it was the same hot dog cart as the guy who was asking the questions at the press conference earlier, but maybe. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. I hope not. I mean, damn.
Good night. You know, I don't think he deserves the hit he would take on his business, you know?
Yeah, he can't afford sodas.
No, he can't afford sodas. But of course, he doesn't have to give Danson and Highsmith all the free food for life anymore, so he was probably doing okay.
Yeah, so yes, he really lucked out on that.
Yeah. So he could probably afford better insurance.
There you go. You know, switch to Geico. Say 40% or more.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh boy. So then we go back to the precinct, and we find out. The captain who appears on the scene, the crime scene, he reveals that he sees Hoyt and Gamble there, even though he told him not to be there. And then he shows that the reason that there was a connection between Urshan and the lottery is because Urshan was hooking up with the lottery girl, the girl that reads the numbers on TV. And like, it was right under your nose if you bothered to look at it. So
that's why he had all the calls there. That's why he was going there. He was just having an affair. It wasn't anything nefarious going on with the money.
Exactly. So yeah. Because they, you know, they didn't follow his orders, they get demoted. Hoyt goes to traffic, and Gamble's working the beat, as it, mm-hmm. as they say. Yeah. So, yeah.
And so the partnership is split up. They're off the case. Alan is still doing some investigation on his own, though. He's going around to where the jewelry theft was staged. And he discovers that next door to that jewelry store, there was an accounting firm. And so he discovers that the jewelry store break-in where Highsmith and Danson died, that was actually to cover them breaking into the accounting firm.
What?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So he gets some credible evidence, and then he gets back on the case, and then he gets his gun back, and then he goes and gets Terry, and he gets Terry back as a partner, and they meet up with the captain, who Michael Keaton, like early in the movie, he has like a quick mention that he has a side job in addition to being captain of the police precinct. A lot of cops, they do have to work outside jobs to make ends meet. And he's like, you know, sending a kid to college so he can become a DJ and explore his bisexuality. So
that's cool. He's accepting father. All right.
Yeah, exactly. So the captain, he also works a side job at Bed Bath & Beyond. And they meet up with their captain at Bed Bath & Beyond. And we see Michael Keaton briefing the folks at Bed Bath & Beyond. And he's like, okay, well, you know, we got these new throw rugs and people are very excited about this. Oh, and also there's a rapist on the south side. So wait a minute. Okay, no, that's my other job. I'm sorry. Ignore that. Wait, no, don't ignore that. I mean, especially if you live on the south side, like walk in pairs.
That's just good advice.
It's so funny, man. It's one of my favorite moments in the movie. Very, very funny.
Right. So, so at this point, Hoyts and Gamble are together again. They had a bit of falling out afterwards, because, you know, Hoyts is always angry, and he says Gamble is not a real cop because he just likes to work the desk. But and Gamble kind of proves that he is a real cop by following up on this case, and he finds this he found out this big thing.
And when they talk with the captain at Bed Bath & Beyond, the captain admits that he has been like holding off on the case because Urshan's got all these big connections, you know, high up. That could, you know, really make things bad for the department. But he allows them to continue working on the case off the books.
Right. Absolutely. So so at this point, I think Gamble, he says, well, he told them everything he knows about Urshan. He says they're going to have this big meeting downtown that, you know, if we go in there nice and quiet, disrupt the meeting and just arrest him and pull him out, like, you know, we'll be able to close this case. So, like, the captain is like, all right, you do what you got to do, and, you know, just don't, you know, you're good cops, and just do what you got to do. So, yeah. So then we go to the meeting, we find out that there's a ton of people there that Urshan owes money to, including some Nigerians and some Chechens as well. So a lot of dangerous people.
Yeah, yeah. Is it Chechens? Why isn't it Chechen?
I thought it was Chechens, but it says Chechens. I looked. It's just like, all right. I guess.
Okay, that's weird. I don't get what's going on there, but because it's Chechnya, right?
I don't know things.
Okay. All right. So anyway, like badass people from foreign countries, they want to kill them.
Yeah. Exactly. Badass people from foreign countries.
Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, but they're in this big investment meeting, and they're getting ready to arrest Urshan. But then they discover, in another plot twist, they discover that the $32 billion that Urshan is trying to get to make up for his debts, is actually coming from the NYPD Police Pension Fund.
Right, and.
And they discover this when like one of their colleagues is there who is asking them about like coming to a meeting for the union about, you know, talking about the pension fund. And they're like, hey, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, well, this is the big investment opportunity I was telling you guys about.
Yeah. And then things get dicey as they try to arrest Urshan. Cause They have the what's it called? Ray Stevenson pulls out a gun on him, saying, "Hey, you know, we're in our rights to defend ourselves because you cops are here without a warrant." And yeah. Then, of course, that's when the Nigerians and the Chechens see things get tense. So then they pull out their guns, and then Hoyt and Gamble look at each other. They kind of nod. We hear a White Stripes song playing in the background out of nowhere. I mean,
when we crank up Icky Thump, you know some shit is going down.
Yeah. I mean, we all saw Justice League, so you know.
Yeah. Yes.
Remember that?
I was not expecting the Justice League reference.
No one expects the Justice League. Okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah, like as we're recording this, it's the day after the DC fandom thing. So we just watched the trailer for the Justice League Snyder Cut. And
yeah, you have thoughts. I've read.
I had thoughts. You know, and it's set to Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, which you know nobody's ever done before in the movies.
Zack Snyder playing Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. He's never done that.
Yeah, no, it's totally uncharted territory.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen Watchmen, which was also directed by Zack Snyder, but I assume he hadn't used that exact same song in that movie either.
No. He didn't play that song while Night Owl and Silk Spectre were having sex in the owl ship above the clouds. No, that didn't happen.
Ooh, hallelujah.
And he didn't cut to, like, you know, a shot of the owl ship's flamethrower going off right as the song reached a climax as a metaphor for... This is a thing that he did in the Watchmen movie.
I forgot about that. It's like, wow, he really did that.
Yep, he did that. He did that.
There's nothing subtle about his film style at all.
No. I mean, it makes you long for the days of, like, trains going into tunnels.
Okay, guys, you see this flame? That's like ejaculate. What were we talking about?
Yeah, so if you ever want to put Hallelujah in your movie, don't. Just don't.
It's pretty tired. Play something. Yeah. Put on a little river band or something else. Just don't.
Exactly. Yeah. And they get so like in this action sequence they Will Ferrell, he throws some papers up in the room to kind of cloud everybody's vision, and then they run out of the boardroom. To the sounds of Icky Thump.
Right. So it's like a big slow motion crazy shootout.
Right.
Wahlberg sliding across the conference table and everybody shooting at everybody. You know, bullets ablaze. And they manage to get out Urshan and the Prius. And they drive off. And then Urshan says, well, I have a secret apartment nobody knows about that I use for prostitutes and for my parents. You know, not at the same time, though. That's disgusting.
Yeah, I like that line. That was good. And they get him there. They get to this quiet place, and they're like, you know, and he's saying like, look, this deal is basically already done. It's just going to be transferred from my account, like to theirs at 9 a.m. in the morning. Like this will be done by 9:01. So there's really nothing you can do to stop it.
Right, and then basically like Urshan confesses everything to him. He said like, yeah, Wesley. The mercenary, they found out that my lawyer was looking into the stuff that you gave him. My lawyer started asking questions, so Wesley went in and like kind of set him up, forced him to drink some gin, and forced him out onto the ledge, and forced him to kind of fall and kill himself.
Yeah. So murder is set up to look like a suicide.
Goes all the way to the top. So yeah. So then Urshan says, yeah, like I already have the pension by 9 a.m. It's gonna transfer to the Lendi Equity Fund. It's gonna pay off them, the people I owe money to, and then after that, it's gonna get transferred to offshore accounts, and that'll be that. So they have to stop the transfer, you know, before it happens the next morning.
Yeah, and but before they do that, they decide they're like, hey, there's a very good chance we could get killed tomorrow trying to stop this from happening. We got to get right with the ladies in our lives. So, you know, Will Ferrell, he goes out, he finds his wife, Eva Mendes, and she's staying with her parents, and he reconciles with her in an interesting way.
Very much. Do you want to describe it? Because I don't even know where to start with that.
Well, I mean, she's with her parents, and her mother, of course, is an older lady, and he's waiting outside, And and there are some people that are watching Will Ferrell, that are tailing Will Ferrell, but they see like this old lady with a walker come out, and they're like, oh, it's just the old lady. That's nothing to worry about. Because they're really watching like for his wife in case Will Ferrell tries to contact her. And Will Ferrell's like outside hiding in the bushes. And the mother comes out and she's like, and she's delivering messages from his wife, Sheila. But because they also have a very active sex life, she's also delivering very sexy messages.
Hey now.
Back to Will Ferrell. She's like, you know, I just want to lie on top of you and you know, like have you pulling my hair while I suck my thumb and call you daddy or something like that.
Yeah. It's a lot of stuff that you shouldn't. Oh, I pulled it up. So Sheila's mom, you know, relays a message to Alan saying she wants you on top of her, holding her hair and riding her like a bucking bronco while she sucks your thumb and says, mommy likey.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he sends mama back into the house and he has her say, well, he wants you to stare into each other's eyes without blinking while you do it. And then afterward, lick the sweat off each other. And she says, I don't want to do this. You say things that are too personal. And she was like, okay, but just one more thing.
Yeah. And so then mom has to go back out and relay another message. And the mom is like, I really don't want to say this. But Alan's like, no, please tell me. This, I could be dead tomorrow.
Yeah.
So the mom's like, all right. She says she wants to unplug all the clocks and the phones and have a 3-day sex marathon.
Yeah.
She wants to walk wrong for a week because you guys did it so hard.
And then it just cuts to her back in the house and she's like, no more. I can't say any more of this. It involves a mannequin hand, an electric shaver, taped to a golf club. And it's left to our imagination just what that precise configuration is doing. But Will Ferrell and Eva Mendes, they're having a good time with each other.
I don't even know how to. I can't. My brain can't even process that.
No, I know. I mean, please write in with your ideas.
Yes, please.
We'll read the ones on the air.
Yeah, exactly. So then after that, Eva Mendes actually dresses up as her mom and meets up with Alan. And then Alan is able to sneak her away to, I guess, Urshan's, you know, secret apartment. And then they plow.
Where he takes the prostitutes and his parents.
Yes, exactly. And then they plow him saying, I'm going to break your hip.
Yeah. And now, meanwhile, Terry is also able to get right with his girlfriend, Francine, in, quite frankly, a much less interesting scene than the one we just watched.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to summarize that, too.
Yeah. I'll address that later. But I don't know. I thought that whole, the whole backstory with Terry and his ex, it was kind of, like, underdeveloped, I thought.
Yeah, didn't really go anywhere. That's true. I'll give you that.
They could have just cut this out. It seems kind of out of place. It doesn't really go anywhere. It's like,
yeah. I mean, I like the scene where she's, you know, doing the ballet rehearsal and he's like, you know, why are you here shaking it for all these guys? That was funny, but I wish they'd done more stuff in that direction because they, you know, they gave Will Ferrell and Eva Mendes fun, wacky stuff to play throughout. And, Mark Wahlberg and Lindsay Sloan didn't really get the same.
Yeah, very, very underdeveloped. But that's, you know, that's my two cents.
Yeah.
So the next day hits and it's the morning, 9 a.m. Hoyts and Gamble take Steve Coogan's character to the bank to stop the transfer, put on Monday by the Mamas and the Papas.
Yeah.
And
car chase set to Monday, which I found very amusing.
I love that song. I'm so happy they chose that.
Yeah.
And of course, as soon as they drive out, they're immediately followed by Wesley and his goons. So they're shooting at the car while they're driving through the streets of New York. And then, of course, then we have the Chechnyan investors.
We got to get to the bottom of this, man.
Yeah. They're shooting at them from a helicopter.
Yeah.
Because I guess you can do that. And at one point, so they're just crazily driving through the streets. They're driving through Chelsea Piers at one point.
They the car, the Prius, by the way, is taking a beating. The Prius is getting shot all to hell, but still performing like a champ. Buy a Prius, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean,
it may feel like driving inside a vagina, but it will get you where you want to go in the middle of a shootout.
It takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
Yes.
And then we had like another.
I am just going to let that double meaning lie there.
Oh shit! I didn't even realize they did that.
Wow. But anyway, when they're at the Chelsea Piers, the helicopter is like after them. The car is like stalled. They're like basically pinned in there, and there's a driving range, and they say to the people at the driving range, and they're being machine gunned a minute ago. They say like, "Hey, we're cops. Shoot your golf balls at the helicopter." And the golfers shoot their golf balls up to the helicopter, and the helicopter crashes in a very impressive flaming crash.
Yeah, so I guess you could just take down a helicopter with golf balls. That's the lesson I learned.
And I guess like when you are being machine gunned 1 minute before, as soon as someone tells you a cop, you are instantly brave enough to do that instead of like diving for cover.
Yep.
I was just like, really? All those people were just instantly like, yes, I'm going to take down this helicopter with my golf club.
It's like, this happened to me before. I know what to do here.
Yeah. I was like, really? Nobody runs away? Nobody's like, no, fuck you. I'm not doing that.
No. And they also had like another scene that I really liked where Martin and Fosse, mm-hmm. Rob Riggle and Damon Wayans Jr., they were giving a speech in front of some kids in a grade school.
Yeah.
And, you know, telling them about, you know, what it's like to be a cop. And they're saying, like, you know, first thing you got to do, try not to be black or Hispanic.
How not to get arrested.
Yes, how not to get arrested.
And do your best not to be black or Hispanic. And they got to this one black kid, and they were just like, oh, man.
And so then after that happens, they're talking to the kids, and while they're talking to the kids, they get a call in the APB saying all points bulletin, Hoyt and Gamble have been spotted with Urshan. You know, we need all hands on deck here. So the cops are like, all right, give me my gun.
Pass the guns up. Pass the guns up.
Yeah.
And then who has the taser? Anybody has a taser? No? Okay, we're good. Who wants to do a ride along?
Yeah, and then apparently they take one of the kids on the ride along to this extremely dangerous situation.
Yeah, it's a very cute scene, and I don't know if it was improv or if that was scripted, but it was very, very funny.
Yeah, like at one point, like when the two guys are driving to the scene and they're making all these sharp turns and everywhere, you can see like the kid kind of flying in the back seat, like from left to right, left to right. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was very cute. So yeah, so we got our big action climax, and you know, we finally have like sort of a. What is it? It's like a Mexican standoff when everybody's like standing around pointing guns at each other, right?
Right. So basically, they make it to the bank on time. They tell the clerk, played by Chris Gethard.
Yeah, another surprising cameo from a comedy person.
Yeah, they tell him not to put the transfer through, but we see that Wesley and their goons got the drop on them, and they're holding the gun on Hoyt and Gamble, saying, "No, put that transfer through." And it's like very much, like you said, Mexican standoff, and it's very tense. But as it looks like our heroes are about to get shot. Because at one point, I think Gamble kind of put a gun on Urshan, saying, "Hey, if you shoot us, we'll shoot him."
Yeah.
And then Wesley just shot all three of them in the shoulder. ending that.
Yeah, because he's like, you know, hey, I can still use him even if he's wounded. I don't have to shoot to kill. So
so then it looks like our heroes, you know, are about to, you know, take a loss. But then all the other cops come in and they stop Wesley and the guys. Like, we see the captain there. Then we see Fosse and Martin there. And, you know, they have a little quick quip where Fosse says, "Oh, I hope you guys like prison food. And penis."
That was a prison rape joke.
Prison rape. It's still the only hilarious type of rape.
Okay.
People make them all the time, and they don't you know, people don't get all up in arms at you about them like you do like a regular rape joke. So, prison rape. Yeah. Thumbs up.
Okay, moving on.
Guys, tweet at me if you want to. They're incredible. I'll take the heat on that. I'll take the hit.
Yeah. Please. Don't tweet at me. Don't tweet at Trumbull Comic about the prison rape. Thank you. Please and thank you. Yes, thank you kindly.
So our heroes. It's like all the bad guys.
You were doing so well.
I know. We were so close. So our heroes pretty much inadvertently saved the day. Like the bad guys that get taken away. Transfer doesn't go through. But later on, we find out that 24 hours after all this, the public finds out about all this. The government gave a TARP fund to bail out Lendl Global.
Yeah.
Because they're too big to fail. So Lendl Global is fine. Urshan was arrested, put in lockup. Wesley was linked to the Beeman murder.
Yeah.
And so all those bad guys got taken away, but like the big, global company got bailed out. So like they kind of got away, which it's a very real ending.
Yeah, it is. And like during the closing credits of the movie, there's like actually animated stuff of like, here's how a Ponzi scheme works. And here's it's all the stuff about like the economic disparity in the country. Like, here's how much a CEO makes more than his workers on average. And you see it going up and up and up and up and up through the decades. Like in the 20s or 30s, they were earning like two or three times. And by the time it gets into like, I think the 90s, they were earning like 300 times what. I mean, it's interesting. You kind of see this like on its way to the movies that Adam McKay moved into after this, like The Big Short and Vice, where he had more, political point of view.
Yeah. And then okay.
Yeah. No. Go ahead.
Well, no. I was gonna say that was the thing that a lot of people talked about when they were describing this movie when it first came out. Like how at the end during the credit they were like you said like talking about the CEOs and what they're able to get away with and how they're able to make all this money and kind of rip off everybody. And it was like very straightforward, serious stuff. It wasn't funny at all. And people were like, "Oh, they're putting this in a comedy? That's an interesting take." And I think that's like that kind of set it apart from all the other Adam McKay comedies in people's mind. It's like, oh yeah, this is the movie where they were seriously trying to teach you something about like what the hell is going on in this world and why the rich get richer. And I was like, interesting.
Yeah. So I mean, I enjoyed this movie. I think this is a bit of an underrated comedy. I think there's a lot of cool stuff in it. There's some nice, fun, surprising gags. There's one running gag that we didn't mention with Michael Keaton, where for like apropos of nothing, he is just quoting from TLC songs. He tells the guys like, "Don't go chasing waterfalls, guys." You're quoting from a TLC song, and he's like, "I don't know what that is."
Yeah,
and then later he just goes, "I don't want no scrubs," and they're like, "No, seriously, that's a TLC song." And he's like, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, like that's his thing. He's just constantly quoting TLC songs throughout. I mean, as far as movies go, I thought this movie was okay. I don't know. Part of me was like, I mean, there were things in it that like I would have taken, like I said before, like the whole thing with Hoyt and his ex. That really didn't go anywhere, and it just kind of was just extra stuff, but it really didn't belong. So I felt like they should have just taken that out, just made him like a single dude.
Yeah.
And I did think it was interesting how they were like the whole plot about like what was actually going on. It did seem a little complicated to me. That's like, I wrote down like so many notes, 'cause like I was trying to follow everything that was going on. It was like I was in college again. I was like, notes. And
yeah,
it was a little too complex or too complicated for me, but I mean, I was able to follow it, but I was still like, this, and I don't know, I feel like they kind of maybe could have mainlined that a little bit more, made it a little bit more palatable. But I mean, I understand, I respect what he's trying to do. Like, he is trying to kind of make like a buddy cop comedy at one point. And at the same time, he's trying to educate you and teach you something about, like, you know, the economics of the real world and what's going on and how all these big companies and CEOs are just making tons and tons of money at the expense of the little guy, which I appreciate. I don't know if it came together quite like I wanted it to. I guess that's what I'll say.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's fair. I mean, I wouldn't put it on the level of like an Anchorman or something like that, but I think this is a perfectly entertaining comedy. It's got a lot of good stuff in it. I mean, when I went to see it in the theaters, I didn't feel like I'd wasted my money, you know?
Yeah, okay. No, fair enough.
I didn't walk out disappointed.
All right. But yeah, that's our movie, guys. That's The Other Guys. So like the two, we have Voights and Gamble kind of driving off in the distance. We see Gamble has a new car. He has like a muscle car, much like The Rock and Samuel Jackson had at the beginning of this movie. And they drive off eating hot dogs. And we have Ice-T saying, yeah, you know, when it comes to like fighting crime, it's not fancy or glossy like it looks in a movie. Sometimes just average cops doing their average job, doing their best to do what they can. Sometimes just, you know, the other guys or those are the real heroes.
Yeah, yeah. I like the basic concept of being a movie about like the other guys in the precinct, you know, with the star cops, you know, like in the Lethal Weapon movies, you see them, you know, Riggs and Murtaugh with all the other folks in the precinct, and they like blow up everybody at the end of Lethal Weapon 2.
Right.
I think it's a funny idea to have a movie about those guys who are just there sitting at their desk while everybody's out doing the action scene stuff.
Right, exactly. It's like having a movie about the other guys who are in the Resistance in Star Wars that aren't Luke and Leia and Han.
Right.
So, yeah that's an apt description or an apt that's an apt analogy.
Yeah.
And so that's the movie. That's The Other Guys. Available on Netflix today.
Yeah. And, you know, also, I think Adam McKay, he did kind of an impressive job with the action scenes, too. You don't think of him as an action director, but there were some good action scenes in this.
Yeah, there's a couple. I mean, it's really interesting how, like, I guess, like they say, like, if you can do comedy, you can do drama. Apparently, like, if you're a comedy director, you can do action movies and drama, you know. Because, like, I think about the Russo brothers, how they got they got to start in doing the TV show Community and Arrested Development and Happy Endings. And now they directed all the Marvel movies, like some of the best Marvel movies, actually.
Right. And I remember like a few years ago when Edgar Wright left the Ant-Man movie, Adam McKay came very, very close to taking it over.
Really?
He was involved with rewriting the script with Paul Rudd, I believe.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see Adam McKay maybe step into a Marvel movie someday.
Interesting. Well, yeah. I mean, he's more than proven himself to be a capable director. So, yeah, who knows? Maybe we'll see Will Ferrell in the MCU.
Yeah.
I could see that. He could play.
Maybe it would have happened.
Yeah, he could pull. I mean, I don't know what MCU character he'd play, but, like, I could see him as, you know, Iron Man's accountant or something.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
What the hey?
All right. Well, so that was about it. So thank you to everybody who voted for The Other Guys. I enjoyed revisiting this movie. I thought it was fun.
And guys, if you've noticed, this is episode 99. So that means next week, that's our 100th episode.
Wait. Let me check the math on that.
Okay. I'll wait.
Carry the one. Yes, it's 100. Math checks out.
I mean, my God. They said it wouldn't last. And they were all...
Yeah, 100 episodes. We've been doing this for nearly 2 years now.
Mother of God, when will we stop?
I don't know. We didn't stop in a pandemic.
That's right. I mean, nothing stops this train.
Nothing stops it. It keeps on a rolling. You know, we might end up doing different movies than we originally announced, but by God, we keep doing them.
Absolutely. And so you guys are probably wondering, what are the SNL nerds going to do for such an auspicious occasion?
What are we going to do? I don't know. I've been curious, and you haven't wanted to tell me.
Oh, well, I'll tell you right now. I'm going to get I'm going to get your live reaction right now. Just, are you ready? You're going to.
Okay. Yeah. Lay it on me.
All right. Hold on to your horses. Here we go.
Okay.
We are going to review the very first episode of Saturday Night Live.
What?
Are you okay?
Yeah, I was just startled. I was. You took me aback.
I like to imagine, as you heard that, you were drinking water and you spit out water all over your laptop.
Yes, I did. That was exactly it. You didn't hear the spattering sound because I do very, very, very quiet, silent spit takes.
It's like you're at a funeral.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But we're going to go all the way back to the beginning. If you have Hulu, you know that all the SNL, not all of them, but a good chunk of the Saturday Night Live episodes are on Hulu, including the first five seasons. So we're going to talk about the first episode of Saturday Night Live, debuted October 11th, 1975. Guest host George Carlin and musical guest Billy Preston and Janice Ian.
Woo!
So this is...
Yeah. This will be neat. I've seen like isolated sketches from the first show, of course, but I don't think I've ever sat down and watched the very first episode all the way through from beginning to end.
I definitely haven't. So this will be like a whole new experience for me. We'll see. We'll get to see, you know, a young, fresh faced cast. We'll see what holds up, what doesn't, what's problematic and what's not. And we should have some hot takes. Should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. So this will be fun, and it's going to be fun after, you know, we've been doing the movie thing for quite a while now. We started our summer hiatus a little early because the show went away a little early, and so it's going to be fun to just be talking about sketches again.
Yeah, we got to get back to our roots, man. We can't forget where we came from.
Exactly.
I mean, we're going Hollywood here. What are we doing?
Yeah, but that's next week. We will be back with the very first episode of SNL.
Right, and if you want to follow me on Twitter or Instagram, you can find me at Darren Credible. That's at D-A-R-I-N Credible.
Yes, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Trumbull Comic, T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L, and the word comic. And you can follow the show's page on Twitter at SNL Nerds Show. And yeah, please follow us. Please help spread the word. Please... You know, when we post an episode, retweet it, share it with people, talk it up. You know, we want to spread the word. We want to grow this thing. We've gone 100 episodes. We want to go 100 more.
Absolutely. And for the love of Pete, just give us a review already. Like, I'm looking at the iTunes over here or the Apple Podcast, whatever they're calling it. And it is nothing since May. So get on that, people. What are you doing?
We really do appreciate it if you rate and review us on iTunes, because that really does help us, boost in the algorithm and all that. And again, help spread the word. Yeah, we love doing this thing, but we want to see it grow some more.
Absolutely. Help our baby grow. Give us reviews and the like.
Yeah. So that's it for this week. And we will see you next week for big episode 100.
The 100.
It won't come around again.
Damn straight. Darn tootin'.
But, hey, we got in a darn tootin'. Yeah.
Bringing it back.
But I think that's it for us this week. So until then, nerds out.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.